today on the Run to the Top podcast.
I have a small list of clients, athletes that I work with, and that's part of the joy is figuring out, you know, what can they do? What is their history and what do they want to achieve? And then figuring out that recipe. It's just so exciting.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Sinead Hockey.
Hi everyone, Sinead here with you for this latest episode of Run to the Top, brought to you by Runners Connect. Thank you so much for joining me today. Whether you're listening to this on your run or maybe during your drive to work, I hope you're having a great day so far and you enjoy this podcast. I think we have a pretty interesting show on tap today, but before I introduce our guest, I just want to fill you in on what you might have missed last week. We were joined by two-time Olympian and CEO of Run Gum, Nick Simmons, who recently retired from the track to focus on a slightly different endeavor, the marathon. Nick will compete at this year's Honolulu Marathon, and he admits he has his work cut out for him as he makes the shift from 800 meters to 26.2 miles. It was such a fun interview, full of insight from one of the best track athletes in American history, so be sure to check it out if you missed it. This week we're speaking with ultra runner, coach, and best-selling author Jenny Hadfield. Jenny first began running to simply lose weight, but as so many people do, she quickly fell in love with the sport. But there was one thing about the running world Jenny didn't love, and that was all the formulaic, one-size-fits-all training plans that didn't really seem to accommodate for busy lifestyles. She began working with runners to create training that fit their unique makeup, as well as their schedules outside running. She's made running more accessible, which is a large part of the reason there's been such a boom in the sport over the last 20 years. Jenny is a true running guru, and I cannot wait to hear what she has to say today. So after a quick break to thank our sponsors, we will jump right into our interview. I want to give a big thanks to Body Health for sponsoring Run to the Top and for giving us Perfect Amino. These 8 essential amino acids are the building blocks of protein that my body needs to train harder and recover faster. You can enter to win a pack of 6 Perfect Amino bottles for free by visiting runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth. Thank you so much to Pacific Health Labs for sponsoring Run to the Top and for giving our listeners free samples of their all-natural Excel gels. Learn more on how to get your free samples at the end of this episode and check out Pacific Health Labs at runnersconnect.net/Pacific Health. Hi, Jenny. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it's an honor to have you. You off to a good day so far?
Absolutely. It's Friday.
Exactly. Yep. I know the feeling. So, Jenny, first off, do you mind just telling us a little bit about yourself and how you first got into running?
Sure. I'm still surprised, and so is my family, that I make my living in the running industry now. I grew up playing team sports post Title IX in the 70s, early 70s. So there weren't a lot of options, but they were just starting to have some options. And one of the best things my mother ever did for us was to sign my sister and I up for softball. 16-inch classic Chicago softball, and just kind of fell in love with team sports. And from there, you know, went into volleyball and basketball, and running was always delivered in a form of punishment in team sports. You know, you had to go run if you missed a layup and or a volleyball serve, and it was always, you know, punishment. So my association was running was painful early on in my life, and I didn't like it. And it wasn't until I was doing an internship. I got my degree in exercise science and doing an internship at a corporate fitness center up in Milwaukee, GE Medical Systems. And I walk in on the first day, and sure enough, all the fitness center employees say, "Oh yeah, we always run this 5K race in the fall, and we'd love for you to join us." And I'm like, "Oh gosh, I'll do anything. I'll take care of your children. I'll clean your floors. I'll clean your bathrooms, but please don't make me run." And they said, "Give us 3 weeks." And I gave them 3 weeks, and they took me by the hand. We started off training together in a small group of three or four employees, and we'd go out, and they started with walking. I was not in great shape. I was overweight, not tremendously so, but not real fit. Wasn't the fittest part of my life. And so they started from where I was, and that was walking. And I'm like, oh, I got done with the 30-minute workout. We're like, I could do this. You know, we had a great conversation and, you know, I felt really good about it. I'm like, wow, if running's like this, I can do this. And then, you know, little by little, we went a little bit farther, and then they started sprinkling in seconds of running, literally 10 to 15 seconds. And then, you know, we'd walk until I caught my breath. And during the duration of that summer season, it was a 3-month internship. I not only was able to run 30 minutes and enjoy it, but I was able to finish that 5K. I finished almost last, and I was almost beaten by a 72-year-old man. I think I was beaten by a 72-year-old man. But it didn't matter to me because it changed my life. It really, truly changed my life. It taught me the value of having a goal, how to tailor a training program to where I was fitness-wise, and the value of community.
That's incredible. I think a lot of runners, first just kind of getting into running, they do experience that initial hump that it's really hard to get over. But as soon as you do, you know, you do start to enjoy running. I think it's interesting that you did kind of get into it in baby steps, like you said. And Jenny, since you started, your running has truly evolved. You are quite an accomplished runner. And you do all of these extreme distances like ultras and adventure races now. So when you first started, did you foresee yourself doing these more extreme races?
I was just hoping I'd make it to the end of the block, quite frankly. And no, gosh. You know, it shocked me that I was able to finish that first 5K. And like many runners, I got bitten by the running bug after that finish. I thought, man, this is incredible. All these people, and it feels so good. And so my first goal was to not get beaten by a 72-year-old man and not finish last. And then when I was able to compete and do more races and do that, I was, I kind of looked to run farther and then eventually faster. And when each like micro goal that I was able to complete, I found myself reaching for more and reaching beyond my self-perceived limits. And I think we all have these limits or barriers that we have in our minds that we build up. And mine was associated with those team sports. And gosh, I couldn't run. I was always the slowest. And so with each one of these finish lines that I completed, I found myself, you know what? That's just not true. It's just not true. And so, no, at first it was just really getting to a finish line and learning about the sport and learning about how to compete. I lost weight doing it along the way and felt really good. And then eventually, you know, one thing leads to another. And I found myself running half marathons and full marathons and eventually a lot longer races, longer distance races and adventure races.
Absolutely. Well, when I was reading up on you, I was thoroughly impressed by all of the adventure races you've done. What have been some races that you feel were defining moments in your career thus far?
I would say certainly that first finish, because that's what made it all happen. That kind of brought me into the industry. And qualifying for the Boston Marathon was huge for me. Once I got to the point where I could finish a race, I never thought that I'd be able to run very fast. And again, it's those mental barriers that I had built up in my head. And so, you know, as I got into it a couple of years later, you know, I built up a foundation and started doing marathons. This was in the early 90s. So there really, you know, there was no Google, there was no internet. It was a very different time. And I joined a group and trained with a group and built myself up to the point where I was able to qualify for the Boston Marathon, which was huge for me, huge. Because it taught me how to push beyond those limits that I had in my head. And then from there, you know, I think the expedition length adventure races brought me back to that, the essence of teamwork again, that I experienced when I was young, weaving in different modes of activity and different modes of racing. I was just enthralled by that and really fueled my love for exploration, both physical, mental, and geographical. And, you know, now I end up using all those skills in other events that I do. I like to mix things up. So gravel races and mountain biking and trail running and mountain climbing and all those things. But I think every race that we finish, every race that we train for and finish can be a pivotal moment. There's always a learning lesson that's involved, but those are probably the key ones for me because they kind of brought me either into a new element and taught me something or allowed me to move beyond a limitation that I had set in my head.
That's great. Absolutely. And I feel like Boston in particular, it's kind of a rite of passage for a lot of runners. So I know a lot of our listeners can definitely relate to that being a defining moment for you. But Jenny, you mentioned that you did have a few difficulties along the way, including some mental barriers to hurdle over. So what were a few of these difficulties and how did you conquer these?
Well, I think the one thing that while I was doing all this running, getting the running bug early on, I was developing my career in corporate fitness. I was the director of a fitness center at Discover Card in Chicago, and I trained for my first marathon. It was the Chicago Marathon in 93. And shortly after that, I finished. It was all great. I was going to do the first Disney Marathon and had a foot injury that was pretty severe. And it was my first injury and I'd never had anything like that before. And it really taught me because I had to stop training. I did deep water running for about 4 or 8 weeks, I believe, and rehabbed it. But just having that injury really taught me that I had overprepared for my first marathon. I was following a template program and, you know, that program could be great for thousands of runners, but for me, it was just too much with what I was doing in my life. I was teaching step aerobics, if we remember step aerobics and low impact aerobics and all those crazy classes that Jane Fonda brought into our lives. But I was doing that every day. And then I was on top of that also, you know, working really long hours in the fitness center and training. And it was just too much for my body. So I learned early on from that not every program is going to work. Not a template program is not going to work for everybody. But for me in that moment, doing too much based on the big picture of the activity of my life really hurt me. So again, learn from that lesson. I believe injuries are an opportunity for growth. So if you're out there and you're struggling with an injury, take a look at why it happened and grow from it. So that was a pivotal moment. I don't have typically injuries unless they're catastrophic injuries like falling off my mountain bike, things like that. So it's really helped me not only tune into my body, but help other runners learn from aches and pains or yellow flags that come up along the way.
Definitely. And I know a lot of our listeners can relate to working a 9-to-5 job and being on your feet a good amount of the day. Mm-hmm. Jenny, I know you actually left the corporate fitness world and you know, you've got your own company revolved around coaching and writing and your own running. So what do you do? How do you use your experiences to help the athletes that you coach today?
Yeah, I think it started with, for me, my coaching career started way back the very first run, having that community embrace me and all the experiences that happen as a runner. And then on top of that, my education and what I learned from that. But in dealing with people one-on-one, that has been the greatest gift for me. And I think my personal experiences as a racer help, but also dealing with, communicating with, connecting with runners has been my greatest teacher in terms of how to put together a coaching philosophy. And at first, when I started coaching, it was in the, again, early 90s. And really, there were maybe one or two books out there, Galloway, I think Hal Higdon. There were a couple of books in Runner's World for sure, but there was no internet, right? And there were like a lot of the programs, most of the programs were geared for people that ran fast and ran often. So 6 to 7 days of running. And what I was finding for both me and people that would approach me about questions is that it just didn't work. Like it just didn't fit for me. My body couldn't run 7 days a week and nor did I want to. So I think things like that where athletes were approaching me, that is how I learned how to coach. Their questions, if I didn't know the answer to the question, I would figure it out. I'd find the answer and then I would sit down with them and apply it to their everyday mortal life. And that's kind of early on how I developed my coaching philosophy. It was, okay, let's look at who's in front of me right now. These folks aren't running 7 days a week. They're not cross-country runners. They're adults that have kids, that have busy lives and jobs, and you know, they might want to run 3 to 4 days a week. They have goals, and they also want to do karate and step aerobics and yoga and all these other things. So it was really a fascinating process for me because it was fresh and new. They're really, I mean, cross training back then didn't exist. Nobody cross trained back then. So to take a step to the side and say, okay, let's make this program work for you was exciting because it did work for them and they enjoyed it. And it goes back to the finding your joy and figuring out what works best for you.
That's great. And I feel like, Jenny, you did really help to pioneer this new avenue for running. And up until you wrote your own book, Running for Mortals, and your other book, Marathoning for Mortals, there weren't, like you said, there weren't a lot of publications on just running for the everyday person that has a job on top of it. So
sure.
Is this really what led you to, I mean, I saw on your website where you actually said you didn't really find coaching, coaching found you. And so is this what you mean by that? Did you just feel like more and more people came to you and expressed their issue with these one-size-fits-all training programs?
Absolutely. And again, my mother is still shocked that I do what I do because I used to complain so much about running. It really is joyful for me. When I was the director of the fitness center, I did my first marathon, and the employees, I had a great relationship with all the employees. They would come in and say, gosh, I'd really love to learn how to do a 5K, or I'd really love to run a marathon. How do I do that? My life is busy. You know, I'm a single mom. And so I would sit down with these employees one by one and figure out, okay, what does your life look like? A, your age, all your vitals, your fitness. We would do fitness evaluation. So I'd have great understanding of what their base was. And then what is your life like? You know, how much time do you have to dedicate to this? Do you have injuries? You know, one by one, I was able to figure out what each person's recipe was. And it was fascinating to see how the other elements of fitness would complement a runner's life and a marathoner's life, but also fascinating to see how each person's recipe would vary and they'd still be successful. So yeah, I think, you know, early on it was just kind of looking at what was available, and there was so much to learn from all the people that had created the plans before me, but what I was seeing in front of me wasn't the same demographic. And so I really needed to use my education in terms of fitness and exercise science and apply all those principles to a runner's life. And really, it was a mortal's life, and they wanted to run. Back then, you wouldn't call yourself a runner unless you were running 7 days a week. So I think so much has changed since then, but it really was a fascinating process. And to this day, I have a small list of clients, athletes that I work with. And that's part of the joy is figuring out, you know, what can they do? What is their history and what do they want to achieve? And then figuring out that recipe. It's just so exciting.
That's awesome. It really does sound like you're truly passionate about kind of figuring out the right equation for each individual. And I know back in the 70s, there wasn't, like you said, there wasn't a lot of cross training. There wasn't a lot of supplementary work that runners did. It was just kind of purely running. And so it's interesting that you have pioneered this other approach where you can also use supplementary work, like getting on the elliptical and doing some aqua jogging, perhaps. So, Jenny, after a few years of coaching, you developed what's called the flow-based training system. So can you describe what this is to our listeners?
Yeah, quite simply, it's training by the flow of your body, the flow of your life, and the goals you want to achieve. It started early on, again, sitting down with each of those employees and creating one by one all of those programs. And then from there, as I started to work with groups in my training company, I realized there was this device that was created. You might know it as a speed distance monitor, GPSs. You're probably familiar with those?
A little bit.
Well, that kind of came into the picture in the middle of my coaching career. You know, several years after I got started, we used to use an old Timex and, you know, there would be 50 laps of memory and, you know, you'd have to go out and time yourself and go get into your car when you got done and drive the distance to see how far you went and then come home and do the math and figure out the stats, right? It was always after the fact that you were figuring out your data and your stats. Well, when the GPS came out, it's been a godsend. It's a great tool. But what I saw were runners in these groups that I was training go from tuning into your body using that Timex watch, listening to your breath, knowing what your pace is, to looking at a number and defining whether it was a good run or a bad run or a fantastic race or a failure based on what they saw on that watch. And so as this evolved and distance speed distance watches became a regular thing, I created the flow-based training model, which is an acronym, which I'll explain in a minute, because I saw so many runners getting themselves into injuries, aches and pains, overtraining because they were following a pace and it just wasn't calculating. And so flow is quite simply, it's F-L-O-W. So flow, F is follow your body, which is listening to your, you know, training by effort. I'm huge on training by effort and keeping it simple. I break it down into three colors. It doesn't have to be a lot of different zones. It's quite simply, can you have a conversation when you're running? If you can, you're in the yellow zone. You're in the easy aerobic zone. If you can talk in short winded, short sentences or one or two words, you're in the orange zone. If you can't talk at all, you're in the red zone. So teaching people how to tune back into their bodies, look away from the watch, and really focus in on what's going on in your body in the moment, because it fluctuates seasonally, it fluctuates daily. It's so important to show up and do a workout based on how you're feeling on that given day. So F is follow your body. L is look for balance. So as you're looking at your training plan or your workout or your week, if you're not training for anything, you're training for life, how can I rearrange my workouts so that there's flow where I add some stress via a workout, and then I also have recovery? This is so important for people that are training for something, because we follow a progressive schedule that builds and builds and builds. So not only is it important to have building weeks and recovery weeks, but also within your week, it's also important to have days where you're running easy, days where you're running hard. Maybe you're doing cross training in there. What I was seeing was, you know, people, especially in the last decade, people doing really high intense workouts every single day. So they might do like a cross training, CrossFit workout one day, and then they would come back and do the next day thinking that was a low impact and cross training, come back the next day and do a super hard interval workout on a track. So it's important to look at the balance of how your training program is going, and then also understand that that's going to vary based on what's going on in your life, how old you are, stress in your life, nutrition, all of those variables.
Absolutely. I love that. Okay. So what are the following ones?
The O of the flow acronym is optimize your training plan. So after you do a workout, keeping track, you know, we have so many great apps now, from Training Peaks to individual apps that you can use where you can log your progress. And I like to have my athletes use a color code. Again, it's just so visual so that they can see it. If they come back from a run and they feel great, or it was a really good solid workout, I have them color coded yellow. If they come back and it was okay, meh, you know, it wasn't good, wasn't bad, then I'll have them color coded orange. And if they come back and they're swearing and they're throwing their shoes into the closet or the garbage can and they're in the bite me zone and it was just awful, awful, awful run, that's red. And sometimes some of my clients really love coloring. So they'll print out their log and then color those in. And if they can see literally, if you're on a trend where you see a lot of orange to red, you're getting off track. And it's such an easy tool to be able to go back and say, okay, I can see my, whether it's because I'm not sleeping or I'm not eating well, or I'm working 60 hours a week, these workouts are headed in the wrong direction. Let me ease back and either take a recovery day, a rest day, but it gives the athlete a tool visually to see I'm going off track or I'm on track. And then finally, W, you've been very patient in this explanation because it's long.
I'm very interested.
we're getting to the end of flow. I promise you, weave it into your life. And this goes back to what I was referring to with the employees. It's, you know, it's one thing to be able to train for a marathon or a half or your first 5K, but you've got to be able to figure out how to weave it into your lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I've got an athlete that I work with. I talk about him quite regularly because I've gotten permission to, who's an attorney. He's a pilot. He travels, you know, 2 to 3 times a week, and he's training to qualify for Boston. And he's a father of 3 kids. So working with him, it's always important to figure out what's going on in your professional work life. Where's your family? How are you feeling? And what can you get in this week? So it's, you know, taking a big picture look at what's going on in your life and how can we weave all these workouts in so that you get in enough stress so that you have that training adaptation, but not too much stress so that you start to burn yourself out.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's great. So, you know, I think that's a good rule to follow, all the acronym or all the letters of the acronym, but especially when it comes to weaving in the work, everyone has a lot on their plates. Everyone that we work with at Runners Connect, they've got all sorts of priorities. And like you said, if they do too much, they can definitely exceed that stress threshold that they've got. So that's a great rule of thumb there.
And I think too, it's as a female, and this is kind of another tangent, but it's an important one. I'm super passionate about tuning into your body and your cycle. Okay. I think as females, we need to talk about it more publicly without shame. Certainly the stages of our lives. I'm heading into menopause right now, but just cyclically, as I was training for my first marathon, I started to notice, because I had a heart rate monitor, oh my gosh, my heart rates are higher during this phase. My workouts are, you know, really struggling during my menses phase. And then I would feel like Wonder Woman, you know, for a couple of days during the month. So it was kind of lit my fascination for the female physiology. And we're just now starting to do more research on women's bodies and our performance. But that's another area where you can turn in. There are fabulous apps where you can start to track your cycle, and just knowing where you are in your cycle is a great step. And then from there, understanding the phases of the cycle, it's really, really simple. If you think of it in terms of your menstrual cycle and then your energetic phases, your follicular phase, your ovulation, and then moving in towards the end of your cycle, moving back towards menstrual cycle, your luteal phase. So we have this flow of high hormones and then low hormones. And you know, that if you look at a typical training program, we typically have 2 to 3 weeks of building and then a week or two of recovery, depending on the coach and depending on the athlete. And we already have this flow that all you have to do is match it to the flow of your body, right? So now during the follicular phase and your ovulation, when your hormones are a little bit higher, that's when you want to push distance or push intensity. And then when you start feeling not so great, maybe your energy levels are a little bit lower, or you're tired, or you might have some cramping, then you bring that down and give your body a recovery week. And when you start to match those two things together, your body will thank you.
I have never thought about it that way. I've never thought about syncing your cycle with your workload. That's interesting. So
it makes a huge difference.
Do you try and implement this kind of approach with your clients, or is this something that you've only recently started? Okay, you do. Okay,
I do. Yeah.
Is that difficult for you, or do they follow certain apps on their phone, or how do they implement this?
Yeah. First step is to have them track their cycles on an app, because everybody's different. You know, you're going to hear that from researchers all the time. Oh, we don't like to do, you know, a lot of research on women because everybody's varies. But I think the more we do it, the more we can learn from it. And that's happening as well. But yeah, get an app. There's tons of them out there. Start tracking the progress of your cycle. I'm tracking it now because I have a game with myself to see if I can figure out how many cycles I have left before I'm done. So it gets really, really interesting. You know, typically for me, when I was training, my cycle was 26 days long on the nosy. And when I wasn't training, it was a little bit longer. So you start to see trends in your body, but you can also start to tune back in. Gosh, I'm really feeling crabby or irritable. I wonder what's going on in my body. Open up the app. Oh, I'm in the luteal phase. You know, my cycle's 3 days away and I'm not, that's why, you know, my hormones are shifting down. There's physiological reasons why we feel those things. And certainly what I've learned is if there's any imbalance going on in your body, male or female, if there's something that's really extreme that's going on in your body, go get it checked out. Mm-hmm. I've had so many female athletes where they either don't have a cycle or their cycles are crazy, heavy, painful. If those things are going on, go see a doctor and get those checked out. That's not normal. So I think I get on a soapbox about this because I think it's so important. It's such an important part of our lives. And we have such a negative stigma about our cycle. And it's one of the most powerful tools that we have as women. And I think once we embrace it and understand it and learn to work with it, you will feel better because you're now giving your body what it's asking for, you know, to push through when you have your cycle. It's not that we can't do that, but your body is actually asking for you to rest. That's the best thing that you can do during that phase. Not that you're not going to be able to do a race or you're not going to be able to push hard, but if you can, easing back and working with the flow literally will help you be a better athlete and also understand and value what our bodies can do. You know, especially, you know, I'm in the heart of moving into perimenopausal and moving into menopause. And, you know, everything I read is just so negative and it's like a death sentence. And really, yeah. if you look at it, this drives me crazy. And it's also true for men because men's hormone levels also drop and low T and all these symptoms and diseases that we've created. It's just part of our natural process of life, right? It's, if you look at the, just for women, if you look at our hormones early on in our lives, prepubescent hormones, they're low. Then we go through all of our cycling years for years, right? And now I'm at the end of that and I'm going back to transitioning back to where I was pre-puberty. And so that's all it is your body. My body right now, the chemistry has changed. So carbs are not my friend. So I know that, right? That doesn't mean I'm not going to have carbs. It just means I need to be careful about what I'm eating now because my body, literally my hormones are transitioning and changing. It's not the end of the world. And eventually they'll go down to where they were when I was a young girl and it'll be stabilized. And, you know, if they're not, then I'll go see a doctor because it's not normal. But I think we really need to change the conversation about both men and women's bodies in our process, that it's not a death sentence, that we can continue on, but it will, the rules change.
Absolutely. And I really do love the idea of syncing up your workload with your cycle, like you said. And Jenny, we actually had last week, we had a daily podcast on how women post-menopause and menopause, going through menopause, how they can optimize their performance. And, you know, as we were doing this podcast, it really did occur to me how little literature there is on for one, just menstrual cycles and how they affect performance, but also on menopause and post-menopause. So is this something that you see? Do you think that there's a lot of research kind of in the near future regarding this topic?
I believe so. And I think because primarily now women have post Title IX, we are more active. So if you look at the baby boomer generation, the Catherine Switzer generation, they are leading the way. Gen Xers are leading the way because we're active, you know, and now we can take these active women and do research on us and figure out what the standards and norms are, figure out how our bodies respond and understand that it's tricky, but it's also very cyclical. You know, there's no... we vary and hormones shift and all that's fine, but it's the same every month, right? Yep. It's the same process. So I think, in time we will begin to see more and more of that, and it won't be such a huge barrier to understanding how women's bodies respond to performance. And I think what we will learn from that research will change and shift how we train.
Absolutely.
And how we live our lives.
Yep. Well, I do think it is, you know, as you said, with the newer generations coming about, there are a lot more female runners. It's a lot more popular among the female population. So I do think that there will be a lot more research in the upcoming years. But as for now, I did like what you said about just kind of being conscious of any sort of changes in your body. And this applies to men as well, but just being conscious of, you know, anything that seems out of the ordinary and seeing a doctor. So Jenny, just a few things in particular, what would you advise say if a woman has maybe skipped a few or missed a few periods, and is that normal for a runner, or do you think that would be grounds to go see a doctor?
Typically, if it's one cycle here or there, that would be kind of a normal thing, especially if you're pushing distance. That would still be an orange category in terms of trending and what your body is telling you. So you want to be mindful, and maybe it's a nutrition thing and lack of nutrition. Maybe it's stress and lack of sleep, but there's some type of imbalance that's going on. And that's a cue that your body is telling you to, hey, take a look and either rest or balance this out, because that's not normal to not have a cycle. And beyond that, if you miss more than one cycle, then I would go seek medical attention with a doctor and get some tests to see what's going on, because that is not normal. Yeah, absolutely. And then you start to move into hormonal imbalances and risks for bone breaks and osteoporosis, things like that, where when your hormones get drastically out of balance, bad things happen. So yeah, I think everybody's different, and certainly it's normal. When I was training, my cycles would be a lot shorter. That's me, and everybody varies. But again, it just goes back to the importance of really tuning in, male or female, what's going on in your body, how is it responding, how am I recovering, and if there's any orange or red flags, pay attention, and it's not the end of the world. I think as runners and athletes, we get so worried if something happens that it's going to end our running careers and we're not going to be able to run a race, when in most cases, if you catch things early and you seek advice, you can get back to running really quickly.
After the break, Jenny will share with us her philosophy on nutrition, as well as some helpful tips on how runners looking to lose weight can fuel their training while still reaching their weight loss goals. This is Sinead Hockey, and you're listening to Run to the Top at Runners Connect. While we runners usually practice good, nutrient-dense diets, most of us lack the amino acids needed to break down and process the proteins we consume. This is bad news for both recovery and muscle growth, not to mention a ton of other vital life processes. That's why Body Health created Perfect Amino, the perfect blend of the 8 essential amino acids to help you build your muscles, expedite recovery, and nab that next personal record. I take Perfect Amino tablets every day and mix the Perfect Amino XP powder in my post-workout smoothies for extended protein absorption. This has helped me work harder and reach new levels in my running, something so important to the Body Health team that if you place in your age group at any public racing event, they'll put you in their winner's circle and send you a free bottle of Perfect Amino. Check it out at runnersconnect.net/winner-circle to learn more, and don't forget to use coupon code RUNNERSCONNECT on your next purchase. That's Runners Connect in all caps. Make sure to also visit runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth, where you can enter to win a 6-pack of Perfect Amino worth $230. Again, that's runnersconnect.net/bodyhealth. I wish you the best of luck. When I started using gels to fuel during my long runs and workouts, I'll be honest, I couldn't find one that I didn't hate having to take. All the gels I tried were either too sweet or too thick, making them hard to consume without chasing them down with gulps and gulps of water. They also seemed to be giving me all sorts of GI issues, which obviously made long runs and workouts a lot harder than they needed to be, but even more importantly, I felt like they were impacting my overall health. That is until I discovered Excel Gel by Pacific Health Labs. Unlike most gels, Excel Gel has a thin consistency that makes it easy to take while running, and it's also all natural, completely free of gluten and preservatives you just don't need. It's also the only gel on the market that has the proven 4-to-1 ratio of carbs to protein, as well as a mix of carbohydrates to smooth glucose uptake and extend endurance. Excel Gel helps me get the most out of my long runs and workouts, and I absolutely love it, especially the raspberry cream flavor with caffeine. Right now, Pacific Health is offering all Run to the Top listeners free samples of Excel Gel. All you have to do is send an email to info@pacifichealthlabs.com with the subject line Run to the Top. Then simply request your Excel Gel samples, as well as the address you'd like them mailed to, and then you can try them for yourself for free. Again, that's info@pacifichealthlabs.com. If you want to check out more of Pacific Health's great products, you can do so at runnersconnect.net/Pacific Health. We are back with Jenny Hadfield. And something else that you said earlier was that, you know, I know you do extreme distances, so you do quite a bit of mileage, I would assume, but you are cutting back on your carb intake a little bit to accommodate for going through menopause. So, Jenny, what in general is your philosophy when it comes to nutrition, and how do you, you know, what advice do you give to your clients when it comes to fueling their training?
Great question. I'm not a nutritional, you know, expert by any means, but it is an area where I get a lot of questions and I give very general information. And if they want more than that, I would advise them to sit down with a one-on-one consultation with a nutritionist, because it can really change your life. Mm. Anyway, for me though, it's always to keep it simple, whether it's about your training or whether it's about your nutrition. There's so many workouts and diets and, you know, tangents and, you know, right, left turns. And I've tried them all personally. I'm a person that likes exploration and experimentation. And I always comes back to me personally that I do better with moderation and balance. And so for me, with my clients, I have them tune in just like they tune in with their training and their body. I have them track, not all the time, but if somebody's struggling and either they're overweight or they're trying to lose weight and they're not, or they're not feeling well in their performance in their workouts, I'll have them track what they're eating for, you know, anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks, and really visually seeing the balance of things. There's so many apps that you can use now that are super helpful, that balance things out and show you exactly not only the calories that you're taking in, but the quantities of the nutrients that you're also getting. And right there, for most people, when they see it, they get it. Yep. When you see, okay, maybe it's not smart to have potato chips at 11 o'clock at night, you know, things like that. Or maybe it's not having enough calories. I see two categories of issues with runners. It's typically that they're underfueling, and that happens a lot with women who are trying to lose weight. They're cutting their calories and trying to push hard in their training, and it just sends their body into a metabolic confused state. Mm-hmm. And they end up gaining weight because their body is under stress. And then I have on the other end of the spectrum, and I see this a lot with marathoners, is overeating, compensating mentally. Oh, I just ran 16 miles, so I'm going to splurge and have this breakfast. And you eat all of the calories that you burn literally in that breakfast, and then you eat the rest of the day, and you end up gaining weight because of that. So it's really been an interesting process, and in just kind of evaluating what people's questions are, but also their struggles and their successes. And the one tool I can say that has helped most readily is to tune in and track and see where you're at. And then if you don't have success after making changes, you know, cleaning up your diet, I'm big on moderation, 80-20, 80% of the time, if you're eating really good, 20% of the time, you can give yourself some of the things that aren't necessarily super healthy, focusing on that balance and fueling at, you know, regular times during the day. If you focus on the fundamentals and you still have issues, go see somebody, go talk to somebody, because they've got the knowledge and the experience to kind of dial in the more details of what's going on in your body.
Definitely. And I, you know, like you said, even at Runners Connect, we have a lot of people that join looking to lose weight, and they do struggle because of what you said. They either underfuel or they overfuel. And so this is some great advice that you've given our listeners. As for trackers, which in particular would you suggest to our listeners that might be interested in tracking their calories?
I think MyFitnessPal is a great place to start. If you're on Training Peaks, people use Training Peaks for their training regimens. They also have a nutritional tool as well. But MyFitnessPal is one of the regulars that my clients use.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, that's one I've used in the past as well, and it does wonders. Something else that I want to note that I really liked what you said was the 80-20 rule. And I do think that indulging in moderation is important to long-term healthy weight loss. So I think that's
absolutely
So that's a great piece of advice you gave there.
I listened to you, and I can't remember her name or the beer, but I'm a huge craft beer fan.
Oh, Caitlin from
such a great podcast.
Sufferfest. Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Sufferfest. That's right. Yeah, I'm still looking for it. But yeah, I mean, we have to have our rewards, and I think earning those things makes all the difference in the world. I mean, when I go out for a hard, whether it's on my bike or a run or a hike, I'm thinking about, I'm going to have, a celebratory beer.
Yeah,
I'm not going to have eight, but it's just the little things in life that help balance that out for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think having a reward system in place and indulging in moderation is definitely key to long-term success there.
The other thing that I might add about that, that's interesting in terms of what's changed through the years. When I first started doing marathons in 93, 94, and even before then, before I even got into it, we had water. And then eventually we had a sports drink like Gatorade. And then we had water, Gatorade, and this thing called goo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was plain goo. It wasn't even flavored. And then vanilla bean came out, and that was a big deal. And we used the goo as a supplement at about 18 to 20 miles in, just to have a little bit of sugar surge to get through the race. And now it literally is like people are eating a buffet when they're doing racing. So I see that. I also, work with athletes and scaling back in terms of you're not trying to replenish the calories you're burning while you're running, you're supplementing. It's a supplementation.
Okay.
So I think that's an area where if a runner is really struggling with their weight, take a look at what you're fueling, how much you're fueling, what you're putting in your body before, during, and after. You could be overdoing it while you're performing.
Interesting. Okay. So in your experience with your clients, how do you think it's more a matter of how much they're fueling, or do you think it's what they're fueling with that kind of comes back to bite them?
More of quantity.
Okay.
If they're struggling, more of quantity. Yeah. It's eating a lot of people have moved away from a sports drink, which I prefer because it's simple and it gets into your system quite quickly. Some people can't take in that sports drink if their stomachs have issues. So they'll go towards more of a product, a bar or beans or whatever the product is, a chews. I mean, there's so many things, wonderful products, but they're all really meant to supplement what your body's already stored up for race day. So if you think of in terms of supplementation rather than replenishment, you're golden, and ease back the throttle on how much energy you're taking and focus in on your diet and getting those carb stores up, the glycogen stores up before you race and work out. Now all of a sudden you show up and your muscles are fueled and ready to go, and you're supplementing. You're supplementing with fluid, you're supplementing with electrolytes, and you're supplementing with energy as well.
Okay, so it's really about taking preemptive action rather than waiting until either the long run or the race to take in these goos and these beans, which are pretty sugary. So I guess, for like a race day fueling strategy, how do you advise your clients go about, maybe for a marathon, for instance? The golden rule, I think, is every 6 miles to 40 minutes, you take in a little bit of something. Is that how you advise your clients do it? Or is it maybe even less than that?
It depends on what their body can handle. I always start from a simple standpoint and say, go with a sports drink, because many times you're getting in all three things very quickly, very efficiently. So if I've got an athlete who's trying to qualify for the Boston Marathon, time is of the essence. Mm. So I'll have them try and figure out the sports drink. If they can train with a sports drink that's going to be served on the course, go with it. And if you get into that model, now all of a sudden you're getting your carbohydrates, you're getting your electrolytes, and you're getting your fluid. And on top of that, late in the later stages of the race, when fatigue sets in and you're starting to deplete those stores, then you can toss in a gel or a beans or a blocks or another sugary substance with a different type of sugar to give you that little bit of hit to get you through the later stages of the race. I will add that pace also has kind of a factor in this. If you're out there longer, typically you're going a little bit slower than somebody who might be pushing. Sometimes you're going harder for you. So it just depends on what your intensity of your effort is. If you're going slower, you're not burning through those glycogen stores. If you're at a conversational pace, you're more aerobic, you're burning more fat. So you take into that consideration. So as you can tell, it gets a little tricky, but the best thing to do is experiment and keep it simple. I always have people scale back. Let's start over. It's like cleaning out your closet. What do you need? What do you know you need? If you're doing a marathon, you know you need to have fluid, you know you need to have electrolytes, and you also need to know you have energy supplement along the way. And start with those basics and figure out a very simple, clean recipe that works for you in that course. And then go from there.
Yep, absolutely. It is very individual to everyone, but like you said, perfect way to experiment is in maybe a long run or a workout and just see what works for you. So great piece of advice there. Jenny, as for any new runners that you end up coaching or any of our listeners that are just getting into running, do you have any more advice for them as they get into their running career here?
Absolutely. First of all, welcome. It's such a great sport. It really is a great sport, great community of people. Start from where you are. My biggest, when I tried to run on my own, my biggest mistake was going out way too quickly. I was trying to, you know, win the race and then get to the end of the block and keel over and cry and come back with my head hanging, and not a good strategy. Start from where you are. I had to start with walking because I was out of shape. So if you've got a basic fitness level, start with run walking and build up from there. Tune into your body along the way. Keep track of things. There's so many tools that you can do. So just everything that we've been talking about, tune into your body. If something's going awry, it means that your body is talking to you, and listen, and then you can modify. And then just be patient. Be patient. Yeah. You know, none of this happens like a tweet or Snapchat or all the other things that happen so instantly. It takes time to build up not only the fitness, but your body's ability to withstand the impact forces of running. It's a challenging modality for us. So give your body plenty of time to adapt. I always say for a newbie, run every other day and fill in with strength training, flexibility types of activities in between.
That's great. And I feel like a lot of runners, we have this personality where we're a bit overzealous sometimes when it comes to training. So that's a great piece of advice there. And
type A?
Yeah, maybe a little bit. So that's great, Jenny. And I wanted to add something that you said earlier where you were talking about the way that you color code your training plans and how people are feeling on each day. I think every runner is, you know, capable of having an orange or a red day here and there. And sometimes it's just, you know, it's just part of the sport. So that's something that every runner deals with, whether they're elite runners or just getting into it. So I think that was another great piece of advice you had there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm bringing a group to Kilimanjaro in Africa. We're going to climb, and it's a high altitude climb. The summit is at over 19,000 feet.
Oh my gosh.
And so I'm doing this altitude tent, which I've done a breathing device in the past, but now I'm working with Hypoxico in sleeping at high altitude. And I'm up at like 12,500 feet while I sleep.
Oh, wow.
And doing some shorter simulation workouts at 14,000 feet right now. And I hit on Monday of this week, I hit a wall so hard. I was exhausted. And I think it was just the culmination of the training. We had grandkids in last week, three of them.
Gosh.
They're real active. And it's a perfect example of I had to take 3 days off and rest and take naps because I was exhausted. So you don't want to get to the point where you hit that point where you all of a sudden you hit a wall. But you're right. I mean, you can see the trend of oranges. If you see more than one orange or two oranges, three oranges start to build up and you start to feel that fatigue building up, take a step back and really evaluate what's going on in your body. It's so important because like I felt like magic today. I got back into my training regimen. It was like the switch was turned on again, just with a couple of days of recovery. So really tune in.
Absolutely. I think, you know, if you kind of push through that, you are setting yourself up for disaster later on. So that's another good piece of advice there. So Jenny, you just said you're training for you've got a lot ahead of you. So what's on tap for you next in terms of your own running as well as your company?
Just a little bit. I do a little bit of everything. I'm, you know, coaching and also creating content for Runner's World and my own podcast, and I post running and active vacations. We've been doing that with my husband for 11 years. So we do land and sea based trips, running cruises. We're heading to Alaska next week, and we use the cruise ship as our hotel and restaurant. And it takes us to really intricate places where we connect with locals and run where they run. And it's just been a fascinating way to travel the world with like-minded active people. So a lot of those trips are coming up. We do one in Alaska, like I said. There's a half marathon that we do in Juneau that we produce. It's small batch just for our runners. And then we do a trail run in Ketchikan and kind of an amazing race-ish in Skagway. And we also do a cruise to the Caribbean, which is like spring break for runners just to get out of the winter. It's more shorter distances because it's warm down there, but lots of kayaking and cross training as well. And then we do, you know, we've done riverboats in France and along the Danube River. And then I do more adventurous trips if you can go without a chocolate on the pillow kind of person. Inca Trail, where we tent. We do it's a marathon distance from start to finish, and you finish at Machu Picchu.
Oh, wow.
And then Kilimanjaro is a first trip for me this year. So it's going to be a fun 7-day trek up to the summit and back down. And then we go on safari for a little party at the end.
Oh my gosh, that sounds amazing. And I noticed on your website, you have these running vacations that you offer. Can anybody apply for these?
Is this absolutely. Okay, awesome. Absolutely. And we have walkers, we have runners, we have half marathoners, marathoners, newbies. Every type of speed. It's a really warm group of people. We're competitive, but just enough. Competitive. And really, it's nice to be able to show up somewhere, whether you know somebody or not, and know that you have something in common, and also enjoy exploring each of the destinations on foot.
Definitely. That's something very special to the running community in particular, I feel like, is just how close-knit and how easily we can relate to one another. So we will definitely link your website below so people can check out your running vacations.
Thank you so much.
Those sound incredible. I'm really interested in checking those out. Jenny, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been truly, truly good, great interview, and really enjoyed hearing from you today. So thanks for taking the time to sit down with us today.
Oh, you bet. And thank you for having me. Huge fan of your podcast.
Well, thank you. I'm a huge fan of yours as well. I think it's safe to say Jenny knows her stuff, and you can really tell just how passionate she is about helping people reach their potential. I loved what she had to say about being conscious of your body's ebbs and flows, and this is really something that applies to both women and men. And I don't know about you, but those running vacations sound amazing. If you're interested in signing up for a running vacation, or you just want to take a look at Jenny's coaching services, you can check out the links in the show notes at runnersconnect.net/RC543. I hope you enjoyed hearing from Jenny just as much as I did. Before I sign off, I've just got one more thing to say. Next week, we'll be speaking with co-founder and lead engineer of Stride, Jamie Williamson. Stride is the first wearable power running meter ever. You can clip the tiny device on your shoe where it uses power as a metric to determine your fitness, muscle endurance, and form efficiency. It sounds so cool, and I cannot wait to have Jamie on the show to talk about it. Be sure to stay tuned for that next week. Thank you so much for joining me, and I hope you have a fantastic run today.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.